and talk radio about all things all genders. This is Intravenous, live on CJSF 90.1 FM, discussing and approaching contemporary gender issues through a feminist lens. Our goal is to educate, engage, and challenge the dominant hegemony.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Intravenous here on CJSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby Campus and Community Radio from Simon Fraser University, where we are located on the ancestral and unceded homelands of the Halkomelem and Squamish-speaking peoples. I hope everyone is having a good start to their day, although it's a slightly more cloudy and rainy one than the past couple of days. I am going to be your host for the next hour. I am Rebecca, and I have been covering some Intravenous episodes for the past, say, 2-3 weeks, and then also back at the middle of 2024 to the end of 2024, start of 2025. And I've had a heavy focus, if you've been tuning in, on gender-based violence, particularly with last week's episode being about the rise in intimate partner violence rates across Canada and kind of a bit globally as well, honing in on the Memorial Day for missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls and Two-Spirit people that happened on May 5th. And I had an interview with Paola from the Sexual Violence Support and Prevention Office here at Simon Fraser University, where we were discussing kind of the impact rising rates of intimate partner violence is having, as well as looking at it on a more niche perspective in post-secondary institutions. And kind of continuing a bit on a similar topic, for this week, I have an interview with Chloe Hunt, who is the founder of Forwards Solutions and these PACE kits, which is a self-collecting DNA evidence for sexual assault victims and survivors, which I will be playing later on. And then I'm going to talk a bit about some topics that she touches on in the interview. She mentions an organization that she works quite heavily with called She Matters Unite, where they have some research specifically in the accessibility crisis of forensic evidence collection here in different parts of Canada. So I will be mentioning two reports that they're doing. One is currently ongoing, and one is being completed. So there is a trigger warning for this episode for anyone tuning in that might get triggered by the talks of sexual assault, rape, any of those things that encompass gender-based violence. That will be what is spoken about for pretty much the whole hour. So if that is something that will be harmful to you in any way, I would strongly advise you to tune out and tune back in at 11 a.m. for Democracy Now! You can always go to the Intravenous playlist and select another episode for this hour to listen to. But once again, I just want to put a trigger warning out there for this morning's episode. But along those lines, I also just want to be thanking all the listeners out there, as it is Listener Appreciation Week here at CJSF 90.1 FM. We wouldn't be able to do what we do without you all listening on the other end. So very grateful to have everyone tune in, especially if you're tuning in regularly. It's a great pleasure to be talking not just to the void, but to whoever is listening, and whether you're in Canada or internationally tuning in, as I know I have some people back in England that like to tune in and listen as well. So just a thank you to all the listeners out there. So before we get into the interview that I conducted with Chloe, I did want to play two songs before getting into this, these are two songs that I found kind of repeatedly mentioned when I was doing research for this as very empowering songs for women and survivors of sexual assault. So we are going to start off with a song called Pretty Distraction by the artist Sky Daddy, and it's a single that was released back in 2023, and it's sort of talking about what it's like to be a woman with various dehumanizing encounters that women have in regard to sexual assault. And then after that, I'm going to play a song called Wolves by the American artist Jensen McRae off of their 2022 debut album Are You Happy Now, and that is a song about people who prey on other people as wolves do. And then after that, we will go in on the interview with Chloe Hunt, who founded the first formalized self-collecting DNA kits in Canada for sexual assault survivors.
She's sweet, lonely, just his type. He pulls her in with a drink and a smile. Naive, baby, don't think twice if it comes with a price. Run for your life. They're always trying to take what's not theirs. Drives me insane, it's not fair. Wants to be left alone. What a horrible world for all of the girls getting catcalled as they're walking home. With keys in her hair, you don't understand what she's had to do to get here. What a beautiful life for a woman who knows what she's worth and knows why she's here. Pretty distraction, they told her to cover up her shoulders, cause the boys couldn't focus. Maybe they should teach him to control his own actions, but that's not what happens. They're always trying to take what's not theirs. Trust me, insane, it's not fair. What a terrible life for a woman who just wants to be left alone. What a horrible world for all of the girls getting catcalled as they're walking home. With keys in her hair, you don't understand what she's had to do to get here. What a beautiful life for a woman who knows what she's worth and knows why she's here. He says, what a pretty distraction. She's just what I need. And I know she'll be mine by the end of the night if I make her as insecure as me. What a terrible life for a woman who just wants to be left alone. Knows why she's here.
I was 15, still in the valley, walking in a parking garage. First time I met a wolf in person. At first I thought it was a dog. I tried to dodge him, he was faster than I'd ever had to be. He smiled and howled in the same moment. It knocked the wind right out of me. Though I got away.
Welcome back to Intravenous here on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby Campus and Community Radio from Simon Fraser University. And just a quick recap of those two songs that we just heard. The first one was called Pretty Distraction by the artist Sky Daddy and was released back in 2023 as a single. And that second one was the song Wolves by the American artist Jensen McRae off of their debut album Are You Happy Now back in 2022. Both are quite some hard-hitting songs when you listen to the lyrics in regard to the topic that we have for today's episode, which is just a reminder for anyone that has tuned in. I have put a trigger warning in for this episode as it's going to heavily be based around sexual assault survivors and DNA self-collection kits for those survivors. So please tune out if that is going to be harmful to you. You can tune back in at 11 a.m. for Democracy Now. You can always put on another Intravenous episode from the playlist on the website cjsf.ca. And yeah, so I am going to play now the interview that I had with Chloe, who is the founder of Pace Kits, which is the first formalized self-collecting DNA kit for survivors in Canada. And she's also the founder of the organization Forwards Solutions. And then after that, I will speak a bit about an organization she has worked quite heavily with called She Matters Unite, which is a organization that is created by survivors and for survivors, and they have some interesting research that they have completed, as well as some research that is ongoing that I'm going to speak a bit about as well. So this is the interview with Chloe Hunt. So to start us off, could you introduce yourself, kind of the reason I've asked you to come and talk to me today, and a bit about the organization?
So my name is Chloe Hunt, and I am the founder of Forward Solutions, which is a social enterprise focused on expanding access to evidence collection after sexual assault, and also expanding access to services and support after sexual assault. I'm currently located on the traditional lands of the Songhees, Esquimalt, Wissahnik people, which is now currently known as Vancouver Island, Victoria. I myself am a settler woman. My pronouns are she, her, and I'm very grateful to be doing this work.
Ah, amazing. So I discovered your work through Frequency News. You did an interview, I think it was probably around 2 months ago now, back in February, regarding your PACE kits. And from my understanding, your PACE kits are a self-collecting DNA kit for sexual assault survivors and victims, correct?
That is correct.
Amazing. So could you explain how this self-collecting DNA kit works? Because I've started to notice, like, because I'm from the UK, and there has recently this year been more discussion on it. A couple of organizations are like sort of dabbling in it. And I think you're the first, if not in Canada, but in BC.
Yeah. So as far as I know, the PACE kit is the first formalized self-collection kit in Canada. Mm-hmm. And I can also speak to the UK piece as well, because I have some knowledge on that. But essentially, the idea of the PACE kit is that if somebody experiences sexual assault and cannot access a traditional forensic exam, they should be able to self-collect evidence in a space that is accessible to them. So the idea is that's where the PACE kit could come in. Let's say the PACE kit could exist in a community organization or a community health center. And if the person cannot access a full forensic exam, then they would be able to self-swab with the support of a trained staff member. Now, in the UK currently, there is self-collection happening in the form of early evidence kits. That's been around for quite a few years, and those are actually administered and housed by law enforcement. I think the one that you're referencing in more recent years is the Enough kit. That is a kit which is essentially a swab in a tube where a person can self-collect and then send it off to a lab, and that lab sample can be preserved for later. It acts as a deterrent for perpetrators, but also as a way of saying, hey, something did happen. With the Enough kits, you're also able to report on a website, and then those reports are publicly posted. Of course, not identifying the perpetrator, but to say, hey, there are assaults happening, let's say at the University of Bristol. Now, where the PACE kit differs from those kits, the PACE kits are kind of on the other extreme. So Enough kits are very radical in that they're just in the survivor's hands, they're in their homes, they're completing collection within the home, whereas the PACE kit has gone kind of the other direction, which is having the kits housed within a frontline organization, having them overseen and having them go directly to law enforcement, really focusing on the chain of custody.
Yeah, because that's where I wanted to ask you about. You've hit the nail on the head, because when I was reading about the Enough kits back in Bristol, it seemed a lot of experts and law enforcement agencies were very against them because of the high risk of contamination, and then they're not admissible in court. So it's kind of like, where's the justice being served with them? But I can see now where yours is differing, because you have trained individuals helping with the collection of the DNA.
Yeah, so the interesting fallacy with the, I don't know if fallacy is the right word there, but with the they are not admissible in court, in the UK specifically, when folks say that, is no evidence is deemed inadmissible at large. So you can't say Enough kits are not admissible. And I know they do say that in the articles, but the fact of the matter is survivor admitted evidence is used all the time in a court of law. For example, folks bringing in underwear, condoms, that is used all the time. Now, the probability of something like the Enough kit being admissible in court is much lower than that of a traditional forensic exam, which is overseen by a professional. But I do want to be cautious and call out when those articles say they are not admissible, because it's essentially that's not a thing. So they may not be admissible. They likely won't be admissible. But the fact of the matter is they can't be deemed inadmissible as a whole. With that as well, going back over to the PACE kit, yeah, what we've done is we've worked with law enforcement, legal professionals, forensics professionals to build out a process in a way where the kits have the best chance possible of being admissible in court. Of course, a full forensic exam administered by a healthcare practitioner, specifically a forensic nurse, is the best evidence. However, the hopes are that if somebody cannot access one of those, they could have the opportunity to have some evidence rather than none.
Yes, exactly. And you've mentioned there that you worked with legal professionals and law enforcement agencies. So how did this process look like for you going from concept to finish with what you've ended up?
Yeah, so I've been extremely privileged to work with such a wide range of people. My work really started with studying the idea of self-collection for about two years before I even founded my organization. And so really understanding how places like Australia and the United Kingdom are currently doing self-collection and how they've successfully implemented that. So I've been able to connect with folks in those countries who actually implemented those programs and learn from the programs that they have set up. And so from those learnings, I was able to start building out not only the kit, but the process around the kit with the support of a range of consultants, including a former RCMP officer that I work very closely with, who's my primary consultant, Kendra Curry-Su. And so she was in the RCMP for about 12 years. She also worked as the senior director at the Prince George Sexual Assault Center. So has that really well-rounded knowledge of not only the law enforcement side, but also the survivor-centered side. So working with folks like that to build out not only a kit that is hopefully trauma-informed to the best of our ability, but also build out a process around that that helps strengthen the case for the kits in court and protect survivors. Because in everything we do, we want to, number one, serve the communities that we are working with, and then also minimize harm, right? If what we're doing is causing further harm, then it shouldn't exist. So everything we do is to minimize harm.
And that's amazing work that you're doing. And I'm curious as to what inspired you to be looking into self-collecting DNA kits for sexual assault victims? Because I feel like this is still a topic that is very taboo, and we know there's issues in the justice system and the trials when it comes to these types of cases, but I don't think it's really spoken about a lot. So I'm curious what actually inspired you to head this direction.
Yeah, so I've been engaged for about the past 2 years in federally funded research into the barriers to accessing forensic DNA collection. So that's the barriers to accessing rape kits in Northern Ontario, Northern BC, and the Yukon. And what we've seen in that report, which will actually be coming out next month, is that there are massive barriers to accessing DNA collection after sexual assault, specifically in rural, remote regions of the province. Honestly, it's across all of Canada, but since we're focusing on Northern BC, we'll speak to Northern BC. We're extremely privileged in the Lower Mainland and on Vancouver Island to have forensic nurses. Forensic nurses should absolutely be everywhere. They are not only the medical professionals, but also the people that are best to be collecting that evidence. And unfortunately, in Northern British Columbia, there are no forensic nurses employed. They're there, but they are not allowed. Actually, I don't know if that's 100% true, but they don't have the same forensic nursing programs as we do down here. And so up north, it is doctors who are administering the kits. If you can find a hospital that has a doctor who can do a kit, you are lucky. A lot of survivors are having to travel vast distances down logging roads to then make to a hospital waiting room, sometimes wait around 10 hours and then have a kit done. And so the reality of the situation is a lot of survivors are not making that journey. And so I believe that every human has a right to collect evidence after sexual assault, and so should have the ability to do that in their own community.
Yeah, exactly. And you've mentioned that you were involved in some federal research, which I was going to ask you about as well. If you can tell us a bit more about in-depth UFO research. I mean, you say it's going to be released next month, the article, yes. And what impact you're hoping it's going to have.
Yeah, so in everything I do, and I also partner, by the way, very closely with an organization called She Matters United. They're out of Ontario, but they're the ones who are leading the federally funded research. We also partnered with Rise Consulting, which is an Indigenous-led consulting and research firm, because we acknowledge that the majority of the population we'd be interacting with most likely would be Indigenous, due to the rural and remote nature of the research. And of course, due to the disproportionate levels of violence that Indigenous women and girls face. And so what we're hoping is that this research brings light to the barriers people are facing. I think the general public thinks that if you're sexually assaulted, you could just walk into a police station or into the hospital and receive care immediately. But the reality of the situation is that that is not true. It's not through the fault of law enforcement or the healthcare system. It's just unfortunately a breakdown of services and a scarcity of services. And so through this research, we're really hoping to bring light to that issue and then also hopefully make change. Like a large part of the issue in Northern BC, the Yukon and Northern Ontario is that if an Indigenous person is reporting to a hospital, they are facing a ton more barriers than let's say you or I would. So bringing in culturally informed care and culturally informed options also is something that we're really hoping to move forward.
Yeah, I was talking the other day with a woman when we were talking about intimate partner violence and how we're seeing a lot more barriers faced by Indigenous women and girls, specifically with the National Day of Awareness coming up on, I believe it's May 5th or it's some point next week in the start of May, which leads me on to my next question for you on how do these kits empower survivors, not only just being able to provide them with a form of self-collecting DNA in a different avenue, but how is it empowering them as well with their stories?
Yeah, so it's interesting because it's hard to say at this point. My hope would be that if survivors are able to collect some evidence rather than none, they can at least feel that they have taken a step, and whether that step is to preserve the evidence for the future, and let's say they decide a year down the road to move forward, then they have that evidence preserved, that could be empowering, or they just do this kit and they say, you know what, that's enough for me. I feel like I've done something, I'm ready to move on from this. It's really just allowing people to take the step and preserve that option for the future.
Okay. And with these kits, do you have any, I mean, not you specifically, but your organization, do you have any links to potentially like counseling services or support services as well for the victims that are choosing to go down this route?
Yes. So when we set up a PACE kit program, we work with the community and we work with our partner organizations within the community. And so with that, we not only create materials for the survivor to review in advance of completing a kit, in advance of going through the consent form, we also create follow-up materials with information about what happens after the kit is completed and with localized provincial and national resources as well. And so we would work with the community and with our partner organization to understand what's available within their community. And we document those resources on the handout.
Oh, that's amazing. Because I think there's also one thing where it falls short in terms of looking at sexual assault survivors is that it doesn't just stop with the collecting of the evidence. There's a whole aftermath that comes with something like this as well. I'm not quite sure, when was your kit released officially?
Yeah, so our first program technically launched December 2024. However, the kits have not been made available in our two partner communities because we've been working with our partner organizations to ensure that the programs are in a place where they're able to support people. So, we're learning constantly. And one of the things that we've learned is we want to not only train the staff on the ground, which we did in